Hello, my name is Albert Zufak. I'm the Chief Economist for Africa at the World Bank, and I'm here to discuss the findings of our new edition of The Pulse, issue number 15. The Pulse is our bi-yearly publication that we issue in April and October, in general, just before the spring meetings and the annual meetings. And I'm here with my colleague, the lead author of the report.
Poonam Shuhanpal.
So The Pulse is our flagship production in the Chief Economist Office of the Africa region. And it is an extremely important product, which is distributed during spring and annual meetings to our main clients, our governors. And they do read it, believe it or not. They read it and they quote it. They often refer to it when I travel to countries. And it's actually having impact also in academic circles. So this is extremely important. And this document is actually produced through a huge collaboration between the Office of the Chief Economist in the Africa region and so many others. Other units across the World Bank, the Research Department, Global Practices, and our valuable country economists who provide inputs to this document. So it's a huge collaborative effort, and it's meant to be our stocktaking of the health, economic health of the continent. Yes, the pulse, right? The pulse of the continent. We take it twice a year. And for this issue number 15, we have paid more attention to not only the macro situation and the update, but we are also looking at infrastructure in Africa. And this issue is critical at a time where we are all discussing economic transformation of the continent, at a time where investment is actually investment growth is actually collapsing. And between 2010 and 2016, I think investment growth has actually declined from 8% to close to zero, Puna. This is actually a huge concern to me. And the Pulse is not only discussing infrastructure, but the macro situation is not that that bright either. I know there is a slight recovery, but I'm sure our readers would like to know a little bit more about the results.
Albert, I agree with you. This is an eagerly awaited report, and our readers like to know what is what are we seeing as the progress in the region? What are the recent developments? And then picking up on a special topic, which this time is infrastructure. So some of the things that we are finding in the current report is that on the plus side, Sub-Saharan Africa is seeing a recovery in growth. This follows 2 years of decelerating growth. And actually in 2016, growth was at the lowest level in more than two decades. So it is good to see that the region is recovering. We expect growth to come in at about 2.6% in 2017. Now, this is a weak recovery, however, because it doesn't even keep pace with the growth of population
exactly.
in the region.
We're still actually seeing a negative per capita growth in Africa despite
yes.
this slow recovery, isn't
yes.
it?
yes. And this hampers progress that has been made in reducing poverty in the region. Therefore, it's very important for African countries to focus on how to revive the momentum on growth and to lift growth so that it improves the livelihoods of people, so that we see improvement in per capita income, so that growth is inclusive and we can make dents in reducing poverty. In short, accelerating poverty reduction.
Right. So what is coming out clearly is that we're not out of the wood yet. But before we actually discuss more those policies that African countries need to implement, we also have to acknowledge that a number of countries in Africa are still growing extremely fast. It's not all gloom and doom, right? It's you know, we still have, you know, at least six countries I see in Africa, you know, Ethiopia, Rwanda, Tanzania, Senegal, Cote d'Ivoire on the West Coast, who are growing at above 6% per year. So part of Africa is still resilient, don't you think?
Absolutely. We are seeing that several countries, the ones that you mentioned, you know, Tanzania, Ethiopia, Cote d'Ivoire, Rwanda, Senegal, are going to be growing at fairly rapid rates of 6% or more. So we do see that in the region, we have multi-speed growth. We have the large economies, the three largest economies, Angola, Nigeria, and South Africa, that are, although they are going to see a pickup this year, it's a very modest pickup in growth. And I think they're still weighed down by issues of policy uncertainty in some cases, by you know, commodity, although they're benefiting from the improvement in commodity prices, they still have a long ways to go to come off the really low growth rates that they are seeing.
Well, so it wasn't only low growth rates. Nigeria, you know, went through a recession in 2016, right? Negative growth rates of GDP. You know, because of this slight improvement in commodity prices, yes, there could be, you know, we're projecting a positive GDP growth for Nigeria, probably around 1%, which is not extraordinary, but it's already turning the corner coming out of that recession.
Yes, I think on the plus side, the global economy is doing better. We have a pickup in global growth. Commodity prices are recovering from the levels in 2016. We expect oil prices to be higher on average by about 28%. We expect metal prices to be higher on average about 11%. So our countries, our commodity exporters, are going to benefit from that. There's also an improvement in investment growth. It has bottomed out, the decline in the slide in investment growth. So that's a plus. Investor appetite for emerging markets is improving. We also have a pickup in global trade in goods, which had slowed down and was actually stagnant last year. So there is a rebound over there. So there are favorable global developments, which is not to say there are not risks, and these risks are on the downside, but there is a favorable global environment in which our countries are operating.
Right. We do have a positive global environment, and that's probably driving this slight recovery. But we do see, powerful headwinds, especially on the domestic side, on the continent. And these include policy and political uncertainty in some of our largest economies, which are definitely pulling our growth average down. You probably want to highlight the fact that, we're still seeing, conflict affecting a number of our countries, especially in the Sahel. And also in terms of, fiscal adjustment, putting pressure on a number of countries, including the CEMAC mm-hmm. countries that are really going through tough times. I think the headwinds, especially domestic headwinds, are rather tilting downwards when it comes to risk to this overall macro outlook.
I couldn't agree with you more. There are problems on the domestic side in terms of weak domestic conditions in some countries. Some of the CEMAC countries, oil exporters, have put off the required adjustment on the fiscal side. So they are looking to do more fiscal adjustment this year, which will weigh down on growth in the short term. There are some countries where policy uncertainty is depressing investment sentiment, and that will have impact in terms of investment flows and growth in turn. But I should also point that several countries in 2016 saw weak agricultural growth because of the drought.
Yes,
and
indeed.
Some of those countries are going to see a boost in agricultural production, which is going to contribute to growth.
Yeah, but that drought was also the reason why a number of countries got into food insecurity situation, and famine in some countries, especially on the east coast of Africa. If we're lucky to have better rainfall this year, then that situation could be quickly reversed, and we could see some gains in terms of growth. Don't you think? Malawi, South Africa, Ethiopia, for example,
will see a rebound in agricultural production.
Yes, right.
We also see, though, as you mentioned, several parts of the continent being affected by food insecurity, and even a famine in South Sudan. Severe food insecurity and food crisis in certain parts of the country. And I think that is an area of concern. And many times we have seen that famines are actually because of policies where people who are in food deficit areas cannot get access to it. And these famines are precipitated by conflict, fragility,
Speaking of policies, I think we, our countries in Africa need to really strengthen policy reform that have started both on the macro side, but more importantly on the structural side, especially policies that can, strengthen institutions for private sector growth. Because at the end of the day, the biggest risk I see is investment collapsing as more and more countries get into fiscal adjustment. How do we protect investment in an environment where you have tightening fiscal, financing conditions globally, in an environment where you have, rising debt, and where countries are actually forced to tighten the belt? How do we protect investment under these circumstances, to me, is still a conundrum.
It's a challenge for the continent. Investment growth has declined very sharply. We know in 2015 it was below 1%. This is well below the levels that we have seen in the past. In 2003-08, growth in investment was around 12%.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Given the large investment needs of the region, there really is an urgency to boost investment, both public and private, so to crowd in private sector investment.
Right.
And as you said, at the same time, maintaining the hard-won, debt sustainability gains that countries have made, and not blowing their budgets to support infrastructure spending in their countries.
And that brings me to this special issue, special topic of this issue, which is infrastructure. For countries to, boost investment and keep investing, in these difficult times, they will have to continue, mobilizing more domestic revenues, for example. We've seen, countries maintaining the taxes over GDP at a rate ridiculously low in Africa. We would have to, continue the reforms that would mobilize domestic resources to sustain those needed investment, for example. But this is an effort that is not taking place fast enough, and that's something we probably need to look at a little bit more closely.
How to finance the region's development needs is of critical importance and urgency, and increasingly it's going to come from domestic resources, both tax and non-tax side. So ways to improve the the tax structure of an economy in a more holistic way, looking at what are the sort of taxes that would improve efficiency, what areas and sectors are sort of ripe for improved, tax structures and tax reform, but at the same time also improving the efficiency of spending, and then developing local markets, capital markets, and financial markets. We have to deepen
our financial sector.
We need to do that.
And local capital markets are just so shallow. And it's important to develop these new tools, new instruments that will allow countries to package all the financing that is needed for infrastructures. Because you're absolutely right. It's not going to be enough to mobilize budgets. Countries would have to, work in partnership with the international community. And I know the World Bank Group is actually organizing itself at this point through the cascading to, de-risk countries and allow, more investment, more private investment to flow into our countries. But our own institutions need to shape up and be able to capture that goodwill. And related to that, is the issue of our utilities. This is not a new issue. We've been talking about reforming our utilities, but performance of our utilities, in all across the infrastructure spectrum has been an issue. We would have to really tackle the issue of efficiency of our utilities. It's been on the table as an issue, but for some reason, reform is not fast enough.
Yes, especially in utilities. But I should also say that we are seeing in certain sectors that the private sector is coming in and providing certain kinds of infrastructure, investment in renewables, and in off-grid solutions. So there is considerable scope there for bringing in the private sector, yes, reforming our utilities, increasing competition, and improving the regulatory frameworks so that we can attract more public-private partnerships. The market for public-private partnerships has been pretty small in Africa so far.
That's right.
Most of the projects we have seen are in about four countries that account for 48 to almost 50% of all the projects.
Four countries only in Africa crystallize almost half of the PPP portfolio. And these countries are well known. It's South Africa, is Kenya, it's Uganda, and Nigeria.
Yes, four countries.
Four countries concentrate almost half of the whole PPP agenda in Africa. I think most countries, the remaining countries in Africa should definitely, use a little bit more of PPPs to finance infrastructure. I'm still not sure what is actually preventing that from happening.
Well, one of the things is that many countries in sub-Saharan Africa, the regulatory structures that underpin procurement in PPPs is not robust enough. So it's below the global right. average. So there is scope to improve procurement procedures, appraisal of projects, selection of projects, and then monitoring and making sure that the public-private partnerships are yielding the kinds of benefits to the community at large and the sector. So they're able to bring it in and that in efficient ways and efficient terms.
Right. It's critical for African countries not only to increase the volume of investment in infrastructure, but to increase efficiency. And the reason why efficiency is so low is, you're right, is because some of the regulations and the regulatory framework is not always conducive to efficient investment. Our procurement systems have to evolve to match the desire to develop modern infrastructure. We need to improve our public investment management. We need to develop capacity within our administrations to actually implement, first of all, select the right projects, but also implement them effectively. So the whole reform of the public investment management system is certainly an agenda where we should be working all together and making sure we see progress. But you know, the one thing I'm taking out of this issue of the pearls, you know, especially on the infrastructure side, is that the gap between Africa and the rest of the developing world is extremely large. It's a huge gap. Africa is underperforming when it comes to infrastructure, and in all dimension of on all dimensions of infrastructure performance. This is a serious.
It is definitely a very serious gap that we see in the performance of infrastructure in Africa, both in terms of quantity and quality and access. And we find that across the several sectors of infrastructure, you know, be it electricity or transportation, even telecommunications. Where there has been a fair amount of progress in Africa, it is lagging. It's lagging other developing regions. Just to give you an example, over the more than the past 20 years, electricity generation capacity per capita has been practically unchanged in sub-Saharan Africa.
Yeah.
Whereas in other regions, developing regions, it has grown at a much faster pace.
That's right.
And although we've seen a doubling of access to electricity, the population access to electricity, it's still only 35% of the population.
Only 35% of African population has access to electricity. This is extremely low. But there is some good news, though. If you look at the telecommunication sector, what has happened is almost a miracle, right? From 3 per 1,000 people in 1990, access to telephone has grown to more than 700 per 1,000 in 2014.
And it's remarkable.
It's remarkable. And what I'm seeing here, what I'm taking away from this, especially from this telecommunication performance, is that when political will, technology, and the right reforms come together, we can see miracles.
Exactly. And what is also, I think, very encouraging is that this progress has been broad-based. So low-income countries in sub-Saharan Africa are seeing the improvement in access in the technology sphere, but also upper-middle-income countries and middle-income countries. So it's broad-based.
It's broad-based. And so the question is, how do we replicate that great success of the telecom sector into other areas of infrastructure in Africa? And I guess these are going to be areas we investigate for the next pulse.
Yes, and we'll be talking about these issues.
And the pulse is, as usual, going to be available on the website of the chief economist of the World Bank for Africa, but also available on the Open Knowledge Repository, the OKR. And on the OKR, you will be able to find more than 4,000 volumes, and get access to all the great knowledge produced by the World Bank and its staff, and you will be able to get more findings from the pulse, but from other knowledge products that we generate at the World Bank. Thank you.
Thank you.